Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fucking hell.
Sorry.
That is the podcast intro.
Welcome to the podcast. It's me, Bridget Huxley.
Hello, welcome to Figuring Out 30. This is a podcast exploring the chaos, confusion, and clarity that comes with life in our 30s. I'm Bridget Huswaite. I might sound a little chirpy right now, which I am, but I'm also, full disclosure, just on like my period deathbed. I'm feeling so shit. This happens every month. Well, I mean, obviously my period happens every month, but a big symptom of my endometriosis is just like how debilitating my period can be. And that has been the case for the last few days, which is really annoying because it's so nice and sunny in Melbourne, but I have just been kind of moping around. But it's all good. It's going to be done in a few days. I'm going to be moving at the end of this week. And I actually had my final podcast guest in this house over the weekend. And she came over straight from performing a drag brunch in South Yarra. I'm so excited for you to hear this conversation because it's with the one and only Gabriella Labucci. So you might know her as the runner-up of Drag Race Down Under Season 3. It just wrapped up and Gabriella was such a star of the season. And it's funny because I actually know Gabriella from a while back and I know Gabriella as Cammy. So we go way back. We worked our first jobs together in Ballarat. That's where we're both from. That's where Gabriella still lives. And we have a massive catch up in this conversation. You're going to hear about our first jobs together. It's a bit like a bit of a trauma dump, I suppose, but it's so funny just reflecting on what it was like for us in high school working our first jobs and also just getting to know when the drag journey started for Gabriella Labucci. Like we were making up for so much lost time in this conversation. It was so good. I loved hearing about this journey and also her first drag gig, which was in Ballarat. And you'll also get a bit of a taste of like the very real nature of the gig economy, because this is such a common thing in creative fields, like just knowing what kind of balance and juggling act you have to make in order to pursue a passion that is, you know, creatively inclined. Like for me, music presenting, I was juggling jobs at like cafes and call centers whilst doing casual shifts at Triple J, like right up until that point that I got a full-time gig. The grind, the hustle is very real, and the exact same has, you know, been Gabriella's experience too. You'll hear about the whole audition process for Drag Race Down Under, things I never even knew about the competition too. It was a very interesting kind of behind the scenes look into the competition that Gabriella was able to provide in this conversation, and also hearing her coming out story, because I was trying to put the pieces together and whether or not Gabriella / Cam came out whilst we were, you know, working our high school jobs together, trying to put together a bit of a timeline. So yeah, I learned so much in this chat. Also Gabriella sharing her story meeting Lady Gaga, so iconic, and so many other things. I don't want to give everything away here, but we're covering a lot of ground. So I just want to give you a heads up as to what you're going to hear, because beyond drag and, you know, the job hustle and everything, you're going to hear about what it's been like to obtain an ADHD diagnosis and how that's kind of impacted Gabriella's life. We cover all of this and so much more, and why at 31, Gabriella Labucci is happier than ever. We love to hear it. We love to see it. So let's go. Gabriella Labucci.
Yep.
Bitch, welcome to Figuring Out 30.
Thank you for having me.
We have a bit to catch up on. Firstly, obviously, congrats on coming runner-up in RuPaul's Drag Race Season 3. What the fuck?
Well, I believe it was, I can't remember who it was. It was Crystal Method season. They said losing is the new winning and I won.
Slay, bitch.
Yeah, I won.
Yes. And you've just come off Work the World Tour. You're like playing arenas.
Uh-huh.
What the hell was that like?
It was very much so that Lady Gaga reference, bus, club, another club, playing, next place, yes. No sleep. It was very much so that, like for instance, Isis and I had to go to Sydney for the finale. And then we flew in this teeny tiny dingy little plane to Canberra, did the show in Canberra, got on a bus, went to Sydney, got into bed at like 4 a.m. and then did a show that night as well.
Oh, my God. Okay, wait, timeline. Have I cooked it? Because wasn't – and the night that it was aired though, wasn't it that the Melbourne –
it overlapped. It overlapped. So Isis and I didn't do the show in Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
We were given the choice because obviously – it was paid work to do the tour, whereas the finale party was not paid work. So they were like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I have a chance of winning, so I want to go and watch
obviously.
If I win. But Floor and Hollywood obviously knew that they weren't going to win, so they're like, we'll stay on the tour.
Oh, got it. Okay, makes so much sense now. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned Lady Gaga, and I feel like we have to kind of talk about that because you've actually met Lady Gaga.
I did once upon a time, but you know what? Lady Gaga met me.
Yeah. True, true, true. What year was that? That was like a decade ago,
Oh, God,
right?
That was like 2012, 2013. Yeah. Oh, my God, decade. Now I feel so old. Thank you. No, Thank you, Bridge.
Figuring out 30. Us old hens. So was it after one of her shows? Was it in Australia?
Yeah, it was in Melbourne. It was at the Born This Way ball that she did way back when, because there was a concert at Rod Laver Arena, I believe it was, and she was singing the song Bad Kids from the album Born This Way, and everyone's throwing presents, and I, funnily enough, threw a crochet blanket that I had used from camping out the night before to be front row, and she caught it and she was like, who threw this? Come backstage after the show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that was another little nod to why crochet had to be the entrance look for Drag Race, because crochet, funnily enough, has gotten me to some pretty good places.
Oh, that's an Easter egg.
Mm.
Wow. So were you like the only person who got to go backstage for that?
I was about like 10.
Okay. 10 and was people. She amazing?
Oh, it was mental. It was only like a 2-minute interaction, but she sprayed us all with that black perfume she had.
Before
it had been released.
Yep.
So we were just like, oh my God, waiting for it to come out. And I still have a bottle to this day, which I wear on special occasions, such as tour and finale.
Yeah.
And
vintage.
Yeah, very much so. It's probably falling to pieces. Like, I know perfume doesn't last, but I'm keeping it, and I don't care if it smells bad now. I'm still going to wear it on a special occasion.
Dude, I would like die to meet Lady Gaga, and I haven't seen her live before. Oh. She is. My biggest regret is not seeing her when she supported Pussycat Dolls in like 2011,
God,
I think it was. And everyone went for her.
I wish.
And they literally, like, so many people left just after her because a lot of her fans. You just go for her, and maybe they weren't so much into Pussycat Dolls, but like she had a bigger crowd than the headliner.
That's camp. I love that.
I know. So we have history.
Mm.
So before we get into your drag journey and I guess your journey into your 30s, let's fucking wind it back. We worked our first jobs together.
Mm-hmm. Back at the old McDonald's on Sturt Street in Ballarat. Now, question for you, Bridget Huswaite. Do you remember how long the fries cook for and at what temperature?
Oh, shit. I should have known that you were going to ask this. I got a blood nose on my first fry shift. That heat. Okay. Is it like, was it 2 or 3 minutes?
2 minutes 55 to 3 minutes 5 at 186.
How do you still
168.
Know this?
I have no idea. I just have pointless trivia stored in my brain and you salted it in the triple arch motion.
I didn't know that. So I never did that in my time.
They always chucked me on fries.
We were hired around the same time, though.
Yeah, probably.
I think. And I remember doing a lot of – you were often an order taker or a cashier, and I was too. I feel like we were down that. And I fucking hated – like this
McDonald's
is
full stop.
Meanwhile, I'm buying all the Macca's range at Peter Alexander. I can't get enough. No, but it's like the trauma from like Friday night drive-through. No. What was your favorite like job to work and your least favorite? Because I hated being like a runner or presenter or order taking without a cashier. That was so dog.
I actually really loved being on fries.
Yeah.
Because like I didn't have to talk to anyone. Yeah. I could just have my shit together and I had like enough like awareness to be like, oh, it's getting busy. I need to drop more and all that sort of stuff and just constantly have it going. But I remember a certain manager one time, if you're listening.
It's funny because I feel like I know
you know exactly
is.
Which one I'm talking about. Had a go at me one time in the drive-thru, not in the drive-thru. I was on the fries and she was like, why are you standing still doing nothing? And another manager was like,
have you had to wait once on fries?
Yeah.
And she was like, no. She's like, he's not doing nothing. He's just like waiting for you to take the stuff. Yeah. So calm your farm.
Oh, my God. This is absolutely the same manager that I dreaded doing drive-through with.
Like, the one that would famously take people outside to the car park and rip a new arsehole.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, look, we won't go there.
No,
but,
it doesn't matter because it's only, what, 100 years later and we're still salty about it.
Yeah, as salty as the fries. Yeah. Did you do kids' parties as well? I remember you were in McCafe for a bit and I was so jealous.
I was a party host. I did everything. I just put my hand up for everything. And then when you weren't there, I did management as well and fucking hated my life.
They never
let
me in.
18 and doing overnight by myself. It was great.
Yeah, I love when you're meant to knock off at like 8 o'clock and your parents are like parked out in front of Pinky's Pizza and you weren't allowed to leave until the bins were sanitized and you would like until you finished your job. So if it was like 8:40 on a school night, isn't that ruthless thinking that we did like a whole day? Like that is just retail and like being a teenager, fuck me, like doing a whole day of school, VC or whatever, and then going to work like you're 4 to 8 or 4 to 9.
Yeah, it's awful, awful. And then they'll call you at first thing on Saturday morning, 6 o'clock Saturday morning. Oh, someone's just called in sick. Can you come in?
I don't drive.
Yeah. So I have to ask my parents, can you get your parents to drop? Oh, they don't want to drop. Oh, just ask them. Awful.
It's so fucked. So I'm glad that we got to bond over that trauma. Look at us now.
Trauma bonding. It's always
truly
fun.
And look, Daisy's on my lap as she always is for my podcast recordings. You also were a stunning like stylist groomer for my parents' dog, Missy.
Yes.
R.I.P.
Yes, but let's not talk about a drag queen being a groomer because there's enough of that talk going around. But different kind.
But the episode of the makeovers with the dogs, as soon as I saw that, I was like, you are going to slay this. And it was, you got such a gorgeous, well-behaved dog that did tricks. Mm-hmm. Well, for what we saw, I don't know if that was a good edit. But.
Yeah, no. Little Billy was gorgeous and she was so well-behaved and so was Aaron, the person I had to make over. He was very well-behaved as well and just did exactly what I asked of him and more so. Like, I just wanted him to shave his mustache and he came in the next day and he'd shaved his arms, his chest, his legs. And I was like, honey, you're going to wear tights. I have hairy legs.
That's fine. That's amazing.
Bless his little heart. But, oh, the anger and the frustration that all of us girls felt when they said, oh, you have to include the dog.
Oh.
We had no idea that there would be a dog there.
Right.
Nor was there anything provided for us to include the dog with.
Oh. So what do you mean? So you had to just go from scratch and terms of like making.
Yeah, they didn't give us like any fabric. They didn't give us any materials to make something for the dog to include them into the challenge.
So
eventually they did like, I don't know, climb into the bloody attic of the shed that we film it in and then they're like, oh, here's this box of crap that we've got if you can use anything out of that.
How did they think of that?
I don't know, but they knew the makeover challenge was coming. I didn't get any makeup for my person, any tights or anything.
And really?
If you look at the episode back, we are quite considerably different skin tones. Like he's a much deeper skin tone than I. So I very much so lucked out that the shade I used for contouring was a perfect match for his skin tone.
Oh, my God.
But fuck me, Dad. I was so worried. I was like, I'm already getting told off about my makeup and now you're not giving me anything to do someone else's face. Fuck, what do I do?
Yeah, that's so weird that you don't have those resources. I was going to ask too because over the time, like this is kind of jumping forward a bit, but we may as well while we're on it.
Why not?
With the – like, you know, as the seasons have evolved, I feel like there has been more of a focus on the queens designing and dressmaking in the studios, like the textiles component, but that's kind of, like diminished a bit over time. So it's weird that, they bring in this kind of challenge and they don't have those resources for you.
Yeah, they probably should know better considering they're into season 1895 of Drag Race globally.
So weird. Okay, well, we have a bit to catch up on because I swear the last time I would have seen you was probably like, I don't even know, it probably would have been dropping Missy off to get like styled and get her nails painted. And a lot has happened. I want to kind of wind back to, like when you got into drag and was it like, were you thinking about this stuff? Were you watching, you know, drag shows or consuming drag content when in high school, like when we were working together? Like, was it that early?
Yes and no. Like, I did a couple of musicals in high school and stuff, but never like considered drag. But anytime that the heels were floating around, I was like, oh, I can throw them on. I love them. That was always fun. Love running around in heels. But it wasn't until about 2013, 2014 that I started playing with drag because RuPaul's Drag Race came into my life. Like I'd seen it before, but I'd never like watched it, if you know what I mean. And I binged it.
Did you? From the first season?
It was, yeah, 1 to 6 was all that was available at that point in time. And I watched it again and again and again and again and again. And I just loved everything about it. And I was like, oh, if I had to do that challenge, I'd do this or I'd do that. And I was like, well, why don't I do that? And here we are. But, you know, pre-Drag Race, I would have to fight tooth and nail to get a gig here, there, anywhere.
Right.
Because it's at every doorstep. You walk down Smith Street and you've got, you know, your Yah-Yahs and your Circuit and Molly's and all that sort of stuff. You can see drag anywhere you bloody go. Whereas in the regional areas, they appreciate it so much more because it's not at their disposal every 2 seconds.
So what was your first gig? Was it in Ballarat?
Yeah.
What was it?
Yeah, it was. I'm trying to think of what it would have been called back when you were in Ballarat. it's changed a lot. Was it Depot?
Where?
Bended Elbow? Yeah. The train station?
Yes, at Bended Elbow. And then
Element is what it was called when I was performing there.
Right. Okay. So they were putting on, like, how many drag queens? Like, were there other drag queens in Ballarat?
There was other people that did drag, yes.
Yeah.
So we used to have a queer-friendly night once a month.
Right.
That was it, once a month. And there was maybe like 4 or 5 of us that would rotate. So you'd be lucky if you got on for the month anyway.
Right.
But I was lucky enough that I was good. And they were like, oh, no, we want you again and again and again and again and again. And then Piano Bar opened many years later and I was fortunate enough to get a couple of gigs here and there and they, you know, saw something in me and they were like, oh, please, we want you to be the weekly. And I got to become essentially the resident queen there and it just gave me so much freedom to just run amok and have so much fun with it.
How good. So it's kind of like your own little blank canvas where you could just really experiment with how you would put on a show, like and were you Gabriella Labucci from the beginning?
From day dot.
And that was from a friend who would, like, what was the fucking story? Like how, it's in your friend circle, someone kept saying it, right?
So what happened was, so I wasn't actually there at the inception. I was like hearing a story and I was like, oh, I love this. So some friends had gone up to, I want to say Falls Festival, Groove in the Moo, one of those.
Yeah.
A festival where you take lots of naughty drugs. And he had taken, I want to say LSD, MDMA, cocaine.
All of this?
Yeah, all at the same time. We were wild back in the day, my love. and he had weed and he couldn't roll. I was a full-time smoker. Most of us were full-time smokers. And any event, anything that he was at, he would always ask us to roll joints for him. At this festival, the people that were with him were like, no, if you want it, you smoke it, you roll it yourself. So he's under the influence, trying to roll these joints, and he has this big floppy joint that's falling to pieces and he has these big old bug eye sunglasses on and sparks it up and feels like Gabriella Labucci smoking this joint. It was just complete nonsense that came out of his mouth.
Just a random name.
Yep, just randomly came to him and he was just, yeah.
I love that.
That's it. They told
me
the story and I was like, that's camp. I'm going to look it up and it didn't exist. So I was like, that's the name.
That's it.
Because I didn't want something that's like, you know, there's so many puns in a lot of drag queen names, which would box me into one genre, which would be essentially comedy. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have to, but I liked the idea of having a bit of a beige name, if you will, because it sets no expectation.
So were you open with doing drag from the get-go or did you have to hide it from
anyone? I just pretty much created an Instagram profile for Gabriella from day one. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it now, give it a go, whatever. I didn't blatantly tell like my family or anything, but they all found it, followed it, and they're just like, yeah, whatever, good on you.
And was this post coming out?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
So when did you come out? Did I know you when you were out?
No.
I don't like.
No, I was too shy. I was an awkward, shy, little self-hating teenager.
Oh, dull.
Oh, it happens. It happens. No, I came out probably about 18 because like I was out going to the local gay night that we had once a month. And
that was at Element.
No, this one was at Hyder.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
This is when I was 18. So I started drag when I was like 22, 23. That was at Element. But yeah, gay night used to be at Hyder.
Yeah.
And I remember Mum picked me up one time and I had a wristband on. She's like, oh, where have you been? I was like, oh, gay night because I'm gay.
And that's how you came out.
Yeah, just she's
in
like,
the car.
Okay, cool.
You guys have had a really good relationship. I mean, like, she worked with us at, like, in the cafe and stuff, and she's always.
She's the manager we were talking about earlier.
No. Imagine that for a fucking
mum's a bitch.
Mum's a mull. Mum traumatized so many children at McDonald's. No. Oh my god. I didn't actually mention it before when we were talking about kids' parties. I was like the first party host to put a kid in timeout because they threw a fucking shoe at me, and I was like, you're going in timeout just on the spot. I was like, I've had it. And I don't think I did after that. I was like, I'm not doing kids' parties anymore. Yeah,
it was the parents that broke the camel's back for me. Yeah. I had one parent who was just like so anal and pushy about this party. And I was like, mate, it's a Macca's party and I am literally 16 years old. What do you want from me?
I'm literally getting paid like $8 an hour. Like, what do you want?
Awful.
But anyway, going back to coming out in the car after a night out at Haidar, that was it.
Yeah, that's it. So simple.
Oh, my God.
And I don't think I even had a conversation with Dad about it. Mum was like, do you want me to tell Dad? I was like, sure, whatever. I don't care. It was just like a very blasé whatever because we had the conversation when I was hungover, first of all. So I was just like, I'm not in the mood to talk. I don't want to talk about this. But also I was like, it's not even a big deal. At that point I was just like, it doesn't even matter anymore. Like I'd rather everyone know so I can just not have to feel awkward or like I'm hiding who I am and all that sort of stuff. And
were there other points leading up to that where you're like, I think now's the time that I'm going to do it, and then you didn't?
Oh, my God. So many times it's on the tip of the tongue, like in the frontal lobe of the cortex, you're just like, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm gay. And you just want to like scream it to people if it's just like.
And then what's holding, like what would be holding you back, especially from telling your parents?
Was it Well, I said on Drag Race in the finale that I always had the fear of like, well, my pop was minister of the church. Right. So, like, am I going to be accepted? Like, there's never really been any, like, there's no reason to think that I wouldn't be accepted, but what if?
Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, it's a cruel, cruel world. And we know that people get kicked out for being gay, and we know that the church has been very anti-homosexual before and all that sort of stuff. And just without knowing, you just create false narratives in your head and run with them and panic and hate yourself. Yeah. It's good fun.
Love it. Yeah. Highly recommend.
Love to hate yourself.
So what do you think you would be doing if you weren't doing drag?
Oh, that is a great question. I would be very, 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 very confused.
Please still not be doing fries.
I wouldn't be doing fries. I'd probably be picking orders at Woolies or something because that's what I was doing before I left for Drag Race. So.
Were you?
Yeah.
So, okay, how about we kind of dissect or just lay it out like the realities of the grind, I guess, for like any creative pursuit, but especially, if you know, are kind of climbing the Drag Race ladder or whatnot. Because very often it's like the gig economy, you're doing like a casual job and it can be, I used to work at Yellow Espresso, like when I was at Triple J until I got a full-time job, I would be, this is a cafe on like the main strip in Ballarat. So I'd do a fucking 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. and then maybe get a call up like, can we get you to fill in on one of the night shows, drive straight down to Melbourne, prep for the show, drive back to Ballarat. Or if I was doing the mid-dawn shift, which is 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. like, you balance shit and you have a very humbling alternative, you know?
Yeah. No, it was very nice that when I started working at Woolies, I had very much so clearly set boundaries from the get-go and said, this is my side hustle. Drag is my career. There will be times when I need to just drop out of a shift because I've had a better offer come through essentially. And they were just like, look, as long as you can give us notice and transparency, we're keen. That's fine.
It's hard to find that. Yeah.
But I think they just like respected it because A, I was upfront and honest, but B, I worked hard when I was
there. You're a good worker.
I worked hard when I was there, but like I'd still come in if they wanted me to, if I could. But once Drag Race was done and dusted, I was like, see ya. Because I just couldn't find the motivation to get out of bed and go to Woolies. I was like, with all the work that's going to be coming my way, I just physically can't do it. And even then I was still at a point where I probably could have done drag full time because I was doing a lot of hens parties, a lot of corporates, just birthdays, private functions and stuff. So I was getting enough work that I could have done it, but I've got a little bit of debt behind me. You've got to pay the bills, all that sort of stuff. So it's just having that security blanket of having a regular source of income versus the gigging because you're not guaranteed work.
Yeah. Well, has the gigging ever got so hard that you're like, God, I don't know if this is going to pay off?
No.
Okay. I love that. I love that.
No,
that's good.
It's people, especially with thank you to Drag Race, like people appreciate what goes into drag and pay accordingly. Like you're not just paying for someone to come and perform. You're paying for the fact that they've had to spend an hour and a half putting their face on, the products that they've had to use, the costumes, the wigs, the shoes, the tights, the padding, the transport, the equipment snatching that you might need to take, like the fact that you are going to be in discomfort, hiding your genitals, like all the things. It's just so much goes into it. It's not just like one, it's not any regular performing at all. It's just a little amalgamation of everything mm-hmm. into one.
What was it about getting on season three? Did you audition for one or two, or were you just holding off until maybe you got to a certain point? Like,
well, season one, we didn't get the chance to audition because it was filmed during COVID.
So they picked?
Yes. They. I think they handpicked maybe like 30, 40 people to submit an application, and then they picked who they wanted.
Okay.
Season two, they opened the doors to everyone, and yes, I threw my hat in the ring. I was not ready.
No.
I was not ready. I wasn't gigging full time. I was just lucky if I got anything at that point. But then we flipped the script and we went, right, we're actively seeking work. We're making this a career. And the work was coming in, and then they opened the doors for season three, and I was like, well, we'll throw the hat in the ring. If I get on, great, we take that path. If I don't, we take this path. Both are leading to success in drag. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah. So what's the audition process like?
Oh, bitch. Well, you have to create a video.
Okay.
And that video goes for about 25 minutes.
Wow.
And it contains an about you questionnaire that goes for about 10 minutes. Two lip syncs, one to a song of their choice, one of your choice. A creative challenge where you have to create an outfit out of unconventional materials. An acting challenge where you have to do a monologue, a portion where you chuck in any other talents that you may have. I think I'm forgetting something. But essentially every factor – oh, Snatch Game. You've got to do Snatch Game on there as well.
Wow.
Every factor of the show essentially you have to throw into your audition tape and keep it under 25 minutes. And like the file size has to be so small, so I had to send it to someone to compress it to send it back to me to send it off.
And so you have to kind of like edit everything together. Oh, my God, so much hard work.
I made a friend like – just hold the camera and I'll just say, go, do this part, stop. And then like, because I just had a vision board in my head and she's like.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Got no idea what you're doing here. I'm like, just, doesn't matter. Yeah. Just this shot, this shot, this shot, this shot. And then it all just came together. I was like, ah, makes sense now.
What was the turnaround for that? So like you found out that was the application and when was it due? Like you had a couple of weeks to do it?
Yeah, I think they throw open the applications for like 3 weeks or so, wow. 2.5 to 3 weeks or something like that.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you said
on top of doing the day job and the gigs as well.
Yeah.
So every time I was in face, I was like, what can I do today to utilize the fact that I'm in makeup?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's good thinking. So you send it in, you obviously hear back, you get a call.
For the shortlist, yes.
Okay. Do you know how many are on the shortlist?
Nope. Okay. No idea. Wouldn't have a clue, but I was just bricking it because I was like, I was picking orders at Woolies and my phone rings and it's New Zealand. And I'm like, oh.
It's them.
Oh my God, it's New Zealand. New Zealand's calling me. Oh my God. And I ran out the back. I was like, I don't care if I get fired for being on my phone. This is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. Mm-hmm. And like, they just call and they're just like, hi, just wanted to let you know you've been shortlisted. We'll be in touch probably before Christmas.
And that was it?
And that was it. And then I waited and I heard nothing. And then Christmas passed and I'd still heard nothing. And then the New Year's passed and I heard nothing.
What were you thinking?
I was like, maybe I haven't made the cut. Maybe I haven't made the cut. And then they call again.
Wow.
And again. And again. And every time they call, they just want something. Just something else. Just something else. Just one little tidbit like, are you vaccinated?
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Would you be available between this date and this date? Okay, bye. Can we set you up an interview with a psych to make sure that you are mentally fit to potentially take part? Okay, bye. And they just do crumbs. little bits. Yeah, very much so pebbling, just giving you a little bit by little bit by little bit. And eventually I got the call and they're like, we would love to fly you over to take part in the series. I was like,
wow.
Yes.
Where were you when you got that call?
I'm trying to think. Do you know where the Sebas Maccas is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so if you drive up from there, there's like that place that has like the Perspex, like the slides hanging off the side of the building. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. Like, is this on Albert Street?
Like, I think so. R&J Batteries, I think. There's like a big roundabout.
I don't know. But anyway, you're in Sebas.
Yeah, I was in Sebas and we just pulled over and I was literally in like an industrial part of Sebas basically. Oh, and I was like, oh, this is such an unglamorous place to get such a glamorous phone call. My goodness. So every time I drive past, I'm like, oh, such a special place.
Yeah. Girl. So, and then how quickly did the season start from then?
I think after that phone call saying you're on it to going to film it, I had maybe 5 weeks, wow. 4 weeks, something like that. I know from the date that they gave us the list of runway themes to flying out was 35 days.
Right.
So I had 35 days to get my shit together and get on a plane.
Have they always done it that mm-hmm. way? So you actually know what the challenges are ahead of time?
I don't necessarily know the challenges, but they give a list of – they give you all the runway themes because, like, there's always the challenge and then the runway.
Oh, yeah.
So they give you all of the runway themes, but they also give you – a rough idea of something that could be for challenges. Like right. For the BMX bitches, it just said 80s choreographed routine.
Right.
That was it. 80s inspired choreography. So a lot of us went like neons and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. What else did it say? Pride inspired dance outfit. Glamorous dance outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Real housewives look. Oh, okay. I don't know what this is going to be, but in like obviously I'm just like, well, that's obviously going to be the acting challenge, mm-hmm. but you never know. They could just put something in there just for shits and giggles just to throw you off.
Yeah.
Because I think they do shit like that. So.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me like because, yeah, otherwise it does become too predictable. Like mm-hmm. you need to have a bit of that spontaneous energy about it. Did you know – you? Okay, so you knew Isis. Was she mm-hmm. the only queen that you knew before going in? Did you have –
Personally, yes, yeah. yes, because Isis also works at Piano Bar. Like we'd never
in Ballarat.
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So Isis lives in Melbourne, but like Piano Bar was in there was one in Melbourne, not anymore. Ballarat, Geelong, Bendigo, Geelong,
yeah,
and Colac.
Yeah.
And like a lot of the girls who work the Piano Bar circuit would, you know, travel to all the different venues and gig all that sort of stuff. Funnily enough, had never had a gig with Isis though.
Really?
It had just never lined up, and the one that we were going to have got cancelled.
Why?
Oh, because it was in Colac and drag doesn't do well in Colac, need I say
that's
more?
It's such a niche place to do, like, drag. Mm. Wow. Okay, that's so nice. Like, it's so crazy that then it's, like, you two are the final two.
Yeah, but I'd seen her beforehand and, like, so it was just comforting knowing that I was going to know someone in there. And, yeah. like, we got to have, like, little chats in the van, even though you're not supposed to because they don't like us talking when it's not on camera. It was just like, it's just going to be you and me. We're going to fucking make it to the end. Yes, we're going to – like, we're each other's support network
that's
sort
nice.
Of thing. And it just happened.
So in between, I guess, filming, do they just send you straight back to a hotel room mm-hmm. and you're kind of just, like, kept mm-hmm. there?
Yep, it's hotel, van, studio, van, hotel, backwards, forwards, that's it.
Did that – anything about that experience surprise you in terms of maybe how you handled it or anything?
Not particularly because, like, I know a couple of people who have done it now. So, like, I knew what I was getting signed up for. Mm-hmm. I knew that there would be twists and turns. I knew that they would play games and try and mess with your head and mm-hmm. make commentary here and there to try and throw you off. And you just got to take everything with a grain of salt and just laugh it off and have fun.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised as to how much RuPaul loved you? Because
yes.
he clearly – like, I was so happy for you from the get-go watching it. Like, you got such a – like, I don't want to say – it's not you got a good edit because you're a good person, but, like, you got – like, I'd be so happy with that run if I was you.
Yeah,
and like
absolutely.
Like, he fully shipped you.
We got the nickname. It was the Lawrence Chaney effect, the Willow Pill effect, you know. Rue doesn't bestow a little nickname or a fun pronunciation for
truly.
Every queen. Like, the only ones – who can I think of? We've got Ivy Winters – May I call
Ivy
you
Winters.
Yeah, Ivy Winters. May I call you Jiggly?
Lawrence Chaney
and Willow Pill are like yeah. the only ones that I can think of.
And you.
And me.
That's actually crazy.
Yeah, it's mental. Well, and it wasn't until about maybe episode 4 or 5 that I was like, oh, shit, I've got to lean into this. I see what's happening now. Because initially I was just like, oh, yeah, it's a thing, but I'm not Italian, so I better not respond. I don't want Italian people to be grumpy
yeah.
with me. But then I was like, oh, no, this is marketable. I can do this. Yes, I better do this.
Yeah. And was that one kind of when you also realized maybe like, wow, he actually like – or did you feel that from the get-go or were you just like it's just being supportive or whatever?
Yeah, I honestly had no idea what I thought Rue thought of me because what you see on camera is essentially the only time that we get with Rue. We mm-hmm. don't get much at all off camera.
Yeah.
Perfect example that I'm trying to explain here is the mini challenge on episode 2, the quick drag one.
Mm-hmm.
When we went in and did the sexy selfies in the bedroom with the pit crew.
Yes, yes.
I was taking photos and I took charge and Rue gave me nothing.
And just like, standing there?
Yeah, just standing there and it's just like occasionally making a little comment or whatever. And then I go to the green room and I can hear Rue howling and cackling at some of the other girls and I was like, oh, okay, yep, I've done really badly. And then I won the thing. I was like, how is this happening? But I think maybe she just appreciated that I went in and commanded the space and was like, yeah. I want you to do this. I want you to do this. I want you to do this.
Just leave it with you.
Just because she wasn't laughing doesn't necessarily mean I didn't win it authentically.
Yeah. You said in the finale, mm-hmm. and this was something that stuck out to me a lot. I mean, for everyone, obviously, but mm-hmm. for someone who knows you and knows a very young Cameron, Cammy, uh-huh, uh-huh. When you said you're proud to be here, but not just be here, like
in the
be
race,
here yeah. in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I, this is why I'm so excited to talk to you. Like, it's such a huge catch up, just kind of, you know, learning about everything that's happened to you since we mm-hmm. like worked our last shift together or whatever, or dropped Missy off. Because this kind of relates to the journey of getting the ADHD diagnosis, mm-hmm. which I had no idea about. Was this something you were navigating whilst in high school? Like,
no, not at all. I had no idea.
Right.
No idea whatsoever. It wasn't until like some new friends came into my life and they were just like, honey, are you familiar with ADHD? And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, can you just have a little read of this? And I was reading some articles and stuff. I'd never felt more personally attacked
really?
In my life.
Like, what kind of symptoms?
Just like the not being able to sit still, the zoning in and out of conversation. And mm-hmm. then like you might ask me something and then I'll say, what? But as you go to repeat yourself, I answer the question because the penny drops. It's like, oh, no, I did actually hear what you said. It's just a big one that I didn't get to talk. Well, I did talk about it on the show. I just didn't make the cut. RSD, rejection sensitivity dysphoria, where people take things to heart so personally, but there's no need to.
Right.
Whatsoever. So a prime example I use for this is like you might be having a party
mm-hmm.
and you've invited someone over here, but I'm here as well and I'm still part of the group. And mm-hmm. you're like, oh, you can come as well if you want. But my brain would go, Oh, do you even want me there? I don't know about that. Oh, you've only invited me because you feel awkward because you've invited this person but you didn't invite me and now you don't actually want me there but you're inviting me out of obligation. Oh, my God. And then just create all these mm-hmm. narratives in my head and, oh, my God. Huh.
So you were experienced, like once you got, I guess, these articles and reading about it, is that when you started, like when did you, go see a doc? Like what the fuck do you do? what did you do in this?
Well, what I did was, funnily enough, have someone in my life who also has ADHD who was like, here, honey, try a Ritalin.
Okay, straight up.
Yep, just straight up, let me try one. And I was like, well, it's either going to be beneficial or it'll make me bounce off of the walls, that apparently that's what happens to people who don't need it. So I took it and the best description for it is like there's fog in my brain and it just had lifted.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, oh, my God, I can actually focus on one thought. I'm not having a thought. I'm not trying to think about what I'm saying to you. I'm not hearing a song in the back of my head. I'm not thinking about that awkward interaction that I had with someone 5 weeks ago.
So that's what it's like happening all at once in your uh-huh. brain, to kind of paint the picture for uh-huh. someone who doesn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much going on. There's a lot of TikToks that go on where like there's lots of sound. If I can find one, I'll send it
yeah.
to you.
It's like a hectic mashup.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so a hectic mashup, but like it's too much overlapping. But the thing is, like, I didn't know that that wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
Because I had no education around it. I had no
frame of reference.
No, yeah. I had no point of reference to know that that wasn't normal, you know.
Yeah. They really miss a lot of things in the health curriculum.
Yeah, endo, they really do. They really do. And like my friends would be talking and I would just like completely zone out and start like dancing around the kitchen. They're like, oh, he's just on screensaver mode. It's like, no, people don't have screensaver mode. That's not normal.
That's not So when was it the most difficult to kind of manage and navigate? Like when would you feel like you were kind of at your lowest with it?
Oh, honestly, it was just like constant feelings of guilt, constant feelings of obligation of like I'm letting people down, but I'm also burning myself out because mm-hmm. I'm trying to people please, massive people pleaser, struggling to keep up with such simple tasks like organization, cleaning up after myself, which, you know, funnily enough, clean as you go should be instilled should be instilled into me. And at work, we'll do it. We'll do it without a heartbeat because there's that expectation. Yes. I'll be letting people down. At home, it's my space. Let it be a pigsty. Yeah. I didn't care because I'm like, well, it's my space. However, there can be mounts of garbage and shit everywhere, but you need a bobby pin. I can tell you, if you lift up that bag and go through that cardboard box under five layers of paper, there's a bobby pin there.
Did you say on the show self-medicated?
Yes. So I, for a long time, was smoking the marijuanas.
Yep.
And I... this is before even knowing what the ADHD was, I would just justify it to people like, you know, people come home from work and they just have a wine.
Yeah,
just have a wine. I was just having a joint just to, unwind from the day because I liked it how it just made everything slow down.
Mm-hmm.
But why does it need to slow down? Mm-hmm. It doesn't for regular, for neurotypical people, I should say. I just didn't realize that I was doing it so much because I liked that it made everything just stop for a minute.
So when did you realize that you – so you don't smoke anymore?
Nope.
When did you decide, no, this isn't – did you – were you like, this isn't helping? Is that what you came to the realization?
Well, no, it was more just that I was starting to get more work in drag and I was performing a lot and I was really puffed and out of breath, so I wanted to stop smoking cigarettes. And I was like, well, if I'm stop smoking cigarettes, I should stop smoking weed as well. Yeah. And it was around the same sort of time that, like, I was looking at getting a diagnosis. So everything sort of just, like, fell into place one thing after the other and it just all happened perfectly at the right time.
Yeah. So when did you get the diagnosis?
Yeah, like probably – November? Wow. October, November maybe? Yeah.
And did that just like what was the feeling? Because I know when I got my endo diagnosis and like it was very validating just to have a not a label but like now
an
I know.
Explanation.
Yeah, an explanation. Yeah. Is that what you felt?
Kind of. Yeah, it was kind of like that. It was almost like there was a grieving process.
Oh, there is.
Because this sounds so silly. I took Ritalin for one of the first times at home and get this right, I got out of bed. And I took it and I'd made my breakfast. Mm-hmm. You following? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd made the breakfast. I ate the breakfast and then I instantly cleaned up after myself. And I cried. I cried and cried and cried because not once in my 31 years of existence had I ever been able to make breakfast, clean up after breakfast. And the dishes would just go on the sink and that's a problem for another time.
Really?
Can't deal with that now. Doesn't spark joy. Need to run away. Can't do it. Ugh.
Yeah, right. And how do you feel about it moving forward and how you navigate?
I just feel like I'm making up for lost time,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. Like I'm pushing through, taking on the absolute most, especially with Drag Race just happening. Like I've got a lot of opportunity coming my way. Bring it on.
Seize
I'm taking
it, bitch.
Everything I can possibly do because I've got a lot of catching up to do. I locked myself away in my room for literally like 10 years of my life.
So
just hating myself.
So did it really affect like your social life and all of those things?
Relationships? Yeah. Like I live in the same town as my parents and like I wouldn't go and see them that frequently. I mean, I still don't at the moment because I'm off touring.
Were you busy?
But yeah, I wasn't like going out to social events or anything. I'd be like, oh, I'm too tired. I'm just going to stay in. I'm just going to have a smoke. I'm just going to watch a movie and just fall asleep, you know, just whatever. And yeah. Honestly, TikTok has been like such a big help as well because like I love that that's a platform where you start getting content brought to you based on your interests. And if you start looking up ADHD, you find other people with it and you go, oh my God, their experience is mine. I do that. That's me. And it's quite validating in that you see similarities in other people who have a formal diagnosis and you go, shit, maybe I should pursue this.
TikTok is responsible for so many people seeking a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's been covered in the news being like, you know, that's actually been a real driving force.
Mm.
And there's obviously there can be, like I find it with endometriosis, sometimes there's a lot of misinformation that's out on social media, but there was like a report that just came out this last week about endo hospitalizations for people in their 20s and 30s, I think the age bracket was. It's more than doubled in the last decade and it's 100% like a huge part of that is due to the awareness of social media as well. So like, yeah, it honestly is like social media changed my life in terms of an endo diagnosis. So
and who would have thought back in the days of MySpace that social media was going to be something that would actually be helpful.
I know. Who knew it would go beyond a bulletin quiz?
A top five friends.
Yeah. Oh. Or PC for PC, like
oh
for
my
like.
Oh, God. Yes.
A little song. What was your MySpace song? Do you remember?
Great DJ by the Ting Tings.
Oh, nice.
At one point. That's the one I can remember. It was like a black and white checkerboard background with like a little rainbow colored looking nails or something. I don't even remember.
We were like coders. Like the fact that we could like, you know, learn the coding to get like
HTML coding to get that fucking MySpace. I mean, I just copied and pasted other shit.
I did too, but I was like, that's actually so impressive. Let's go into expectation versus reality in context of your 30s, right? Mm-hmm. So Cam, growing up, what did you think you would be? The kind of person you'd be or what you would have achieved by the age of 30 versus the reality of what your life was like at 30.
Well, buckle in, sweetheart, because it's about to get real.
Let's go.
I always said I think I would be lucky to be alive at the age of 30.
Really?
Because I was a full-time smoker. I was doing drugs quite a lot. Poor diet, no sleep, running on the smell of an oily rag constantly. And I was like, well, I'm having fun. If it ends, it ends.
You actually thought that you would not be alive.
I mean, I joked about it, but like, I suppose there was like a bit of truth to that little like, ah, I'll be dead by 30. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
Approaching 30, did you stop to think, what do I like, who is this person as we hit 30? Did the idea of turning 30 scare you or anything?
No, I don't think it really scared me, the thought of turning 30, but it happened and then I was like, maybe I probably should try and get my shit together.
Really?
Now. Yeah.
So what was happening, let's say day of turning 30, what was going on in your life? How would you describe your life? So when I asked that, a lot of people might be like,
tired.
Tired. When people answer this and they're like, you know, I thought 30, I'd be like, married with kids or be in this particular job or be living somewhere else. Like, so what was, you know, Cam at 30?
I think, yeah, very much so in a committed relationship. I didn't know if marriage would have been a thing at that point in time because, like, it was only legal as of, like, 5 seconds ago in the grand scheme of things. But, yeah, married, kids, marriage, mortgage, menopause, all that jazz.
Yeah.
Wait.
Are you in a relationship?
No.
But you thought you would
be? Yeah, I thought by the age of 30 I would have been, you know, with a partner, with kids.
Yep.
Working away, paying off a house.
Yep.
Doing all that shit, raising a family.
And 30, so like single, without kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you look at, you know, Cam at 30 and, you know, you've had a year of being in your 30s now, mm-hmm, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy?
I'm stoked.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier. Like I don't need a man to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I don't even think I want one because, like, I think I always wanted that validation of, like, a relationship and a family and all that sort of stuff to feel complete. But, mm-hmm, like, I've really challenged my views on what a relationship is or what it means to be someone in society or something like that. And I don't even know if I want kids anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want a partner. I've been toying with the idea of me potentially being asexual, all sorts of things, and it just – frees up a lot of time to focus on me.
It's great.
It's so good.
I think as well with everything that's happening for you with drag, like this is the best time for you to just focus on yourself, mm-hmm, and what you, mm-hmm, want to get out of your life professionally, mm-hmm, personally, just within yourself, like enjoying your own company and setting your boundaries and all that kind of shit. Like it's a very – I was saying this to a friend who's just like called off an engagement and was saying the exact same thing to her. Like it's a very powerful position to be in. And sometimes people don't feel like that or they can't quite see it at that point. But do you feel like you see that? Like you're like,
absolutely,
this is fucking good.
Absolutely. Like if anyone was to be with me, they should be so fucking lucky, let me tell you. They
yes,
should be like, I will not be tolerating less than perfection if someone is going to be worthy of my time.
Yep.
And by that I mean like romantically, like everyone is worthy of my time. But yeah, it's very interesting, especially now being what I refer to as gay famous. A lot of people know who I am.
Yeah.
And are making themselves very available.
Oh, in the DMs?
Yeah.
Are you on apps?
Yeah. Yes and no. Like I occasionally download the apps more so I did while I was on tour, but not to like fool around with people or anything, but just to be like, hey, you're the local queer community. Where do we go?
Yeah.
What's good to eat? Where's good to go clubbing? Where do we get good drinks? All that stuff. It's a very useful tool. But then also it does come with a lot of unsolicited
dick pics.
Imagery.
Yeah, yeah.
which is fine. Like I'm happy to gander, but I don't need to have that anywhere near me.
Yeah.
I don't want to put the work in.
I'm
get away
just
from
fine.
Me. Yeah. I'm like, that's nice. Thanks for sharing. Where are yours? No.
Not today.
No, not ever.
Not ever.
Not ever. Not my thing. Mm-mm.
It's not. It's not happening, doll.
No.
So you're feeling good about your 30s?
Yes. Yes. I'm in the best position in my life, mentally, physically, financially, emotionally, everything. I'm fucking tired.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different kind of tired, mm-hmm, because like previously I was tired because I was locking myself away and doing nothing with my life and just spiraling. Whereas now I'm exhausted because she's working.
She's getting it done.
She's working hard.
Mm. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
It's so nice to see like, I just love seeing it, especially because I know that you've always been a very kind and caring person. You know, when you just like seeing good shit happen to good people, so good. And I was so excited to see you on this season. And then just to come runner up is amazing.
I'm so thrilled about it too, because like
you should be.
It could be very much so the Shannon Knoll effect, you know. people who come runner up often do really, really well, if not better than the person who won it. So we'll see what happens. I will do a versus the world. Anyone's watching. Hopefully that opportunity comes.
Yeah. So what is like what's next for Gabriella Labucci?
Well, I would love to do music. Mm-hmm. I would love to travel globally, because my first time going overseas was to film Drag Race. I've never been overseas.
Oh my God, Gabby, are you serious?
Yeah, dead set.
She's never done Europe?
No.
Vegas?
I didn't have the money.
Wow. Yeah.
I had poor impulse control, and any money I had went on cigarettes and drugs. Really? So another thing that was causing like the depression and all that sort of stuff. It's like, I'm never going to get ahead because my addiction, all this sort of stuff is just like locking me down here.
Yeah.
But anyway, would love to travel, music, travel. If the opportunity comes, I would gladly do another season, be it All Stars or Versus the World.
Yeah. Oh, you'd be perfect on an All Stars.
I would love it.
And both Versus the World.
I would love it. Hopefully a Versus the World, because like I love Down Under, but I would love to do a season that has more than $2 of a budget.
Yeah. I think we'd all love that.
yes. No, it'd be good fun.
Cam, Gabriella Labucci, so nice to catch up, have you on my potty, and can't wait to see you fucking slay it, queen.
I know you said potty, but like...
Oh, no, what are you thinking? Potty?
Like toilet. Cam, I will gladly come and take a shit at your place anytime, Bridge.
Toilet's right there.
Yes.
If you want to stay connected with Gabriella Labucci, I've popped her Instagram handle in the show notes of this episode. So follow her, stay up to date with all her upcoming gigs, and also the link to her merch store. We've got some really cool t-shirts and pins. And yeah, if you have functions like hens, birthdays, whatever, and you want a drag queen, and especially if you're in Victoria and you're in, you know, Melbourne or even like Geelong, Ballarat, whatever, book Gabriella. I am like, I'm not engaged, but if I ever do have a hens party, she's absolutely performing at mine. I've already shotgunned that. So yeah, get around her. She's an incredible performer and has just come runner up in RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under season 3. So rightfully deserved. I mean, she's always been a winner in my eyes, but this is just the beginning for Gabriella Labucci. Woohoo! All right, that's all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to Figuring Out 30. I'm Bridget Hustawaite. This podcast has been produced, created, everything has been done on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and it is an entirely independent project. So if you like what you're hearing, please share it with your friends who you think may enjoy it as well. And if you have any time, to leave a review and rating, because that really helps the podcast reach more people. Thanks so much. And I will catch you next week. I'll be coming to you from my brand new house. Woohoo! Okay, bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.